and show that video to start. We are in the early stages of a series entitled Here and Now. This is a series that's going to take us up through Easter. This series is built around the idea not only that Jesus came 2,000 years ago, but that he continues to come. He continues to show up and be active in this place, in this time frame, 21st century Central Michigan. And this is it is a different thing to think about Jesus both as then, but also as here and now. We talked last week about how we see history looking backwards, and usually history is a study of things that have happened, and we don't always bring that history into today. I mean, if we do that, it is what if we learn from the mistakes of history? Are we repeating history again? Jesus and the approach and just the mindset that we have about what Jesus does is different than that. We think about and talk about Jesus differently than we talk about anyone else throughout recorded human history and certainly in the history of the Bible. That Jesus is someone who is definitely interested in us learning from things that have happened and things that Jesus did, but Jesus is also acutely aware of our need for him today. So that's why this series is entitled Here and Now, that Jesus isn't just something that happened. He wasn't just someone that came a while ago, but he is someone that is here today desiring to engage with us on a regular basis today. So last week we talked about the issue of being present, and we're going to continue that conversation a little bit this morning as well. We're going to go to Exodus chapter 33. So if you have your Bibles, you might want to find that spot. Exodus chapter 33, there is this interesting engagement that Moses has with God in Exodus 33. Go ahead to that next slide there. This says Exodus 30. This is a mistake that I made. Do not pay attention to that. Exodus 33 is where we're at, not Exodus 30. In this encounter that Moses has with God, the activity and the glory of God is something that Moses is after here. And so let's just look together. Let's read together Exodus chapter 33, verse 12. Moses said to the Lord, "You have been telling me, lead these people, but you have not let me know whom you will send with me. You have said, 'I know you by name and have found favor with me.' If you are pleased with me, teach me your ways, so that I may know you and continue to find favor with you. Remember that this nation is your people." So let's just pause there for a second. It would be very easy to look at this and feel like Moses is scolding God. God, you asked me to come out here, but you haven't given me all the details I need. You haven't given me all the pieces I need. So just remember these promises that you made to me. I don't think that's what Moses is doing here. I think there might be a little bit of self-talk that is happening with Moses. Ever do that? You're kind of reminding yourself of some things that you know or some things that you heard. I think that's what Moses is doing here. He is simply verbalizing and reminding himself more than anything, God promised that some things would happen. God said, I want you to go and lead these people. There's going to be some significant things that happen. There's going to be some significant steps that you're going to make. And I think Moses is just kind of reminding himself, this is what God said. So with that in mind, let's look. Continue to read. Verse 14, the Lord replied, my presence will go with you, and I will give you rest. Then Moses said to him, if your presence does not go with us, do not send us up from here. How will anyone that you are pleased with, how will anyone know that you are pleased with me and with your people unless you go with us? What else will distinguish me and your people from all other people on the face of the earth? We could camp out on those two verses for weeks and just talk about the importance of God and his presence going with us and going ahead of us. And if God has not directed us to go somewhere, then we shouldn't leave where we are. We should not go forward with our plans or our hopes, our dreams or desires if God has not led us to go beyond where we are right now. That's really what Moses is saying. Of all the people in all of the earth, you have said that you desire a relationship with us. But if you don't go with us, we don't want to leave. If you don't go ahead of us, we're not going to follow. Verse 17, and the Lord said to Moses, I will do the very thing you have asked because I am pleased with you and I know you by name. Then Moses said, verse 18, now show me your glory. And the Lord said, I will cause all my goodness to pass in front of you and I will proclaim my name, the Lord, in your presence. I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. But, he said, you cannot see my face, for no one may see my face and live. Then the Lord said, there is a place near me where you may stand on a rock. When my glory passes by, I will put you in the cleft of the rock and cover you with my hand until I have passed by. And then I will remove my hand, and you will see my back, but my face must not be seen. Moses asks for something that he's never seen before, something that he's never had before. God has already started to do some miracles, and God has started to clear the way for Moses to be a great leader, but he is asking for something more than just the activity of God. He's asking for the presence of God in a different way than he'd ever seen it before, the glory of God. Now, you don't have to go to this spot. I think this is on the next slide there. In John chapter 4, there is this thing as John begins to introduce the coming of Jesus. He says this. This is in verse 14. The Word, referring to God, became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. And then jump down to verse 18. No one has ever seen God. But God, the one and only, who is at the Father's side, has made him known. John here, as he's writing, is talking about the coming of Jesus. He's talking about the revelation of God being sent down in the form of a man. So Moses is after the glory of God, and then we go fast forward into the first part of the New Testament where Jesus is starting to show up, and John is basically saying that thing that Moses asked for is here on full display in Jesus. Here's something that we said last week, and it's probably going to run throughout this series, is that nothing is more important than the presence of God. Nothing. All of the things that we can do and the plans that we can make and the places we can go and the money we can spend and all that we can do as a church, as families, as individuals, as businesses, there is nothing more important than the presence of God. Nothing. Nothing matters more than God showing up in our lives. And if you and I believe that very simple statement, it is a simple statement, but it is loaded, that there is nothing more important than the presence of God. If we believe that, there is nothing that we as God's people cannot accomplish. We will be fully equipped to love and serve and pour out our lives into others. There is nothing that cannot be accomplished if we believe and live out this idea that the presence of God is more important than anything else. There is nothing more important and powerful and potent than the presence of God. In just a couple of months, my wife and I will celebrate our 20th wedding anniversary. I know, like, wow, did you get married at 15? No, I didn't. Oh. Depending on who you talk to. So, over the course of 20 years, I have tried to learn some things about being married. It has taken most of that for me to learn what I know today. One thing that I learned, and I should have seen this coming when we were dating, but again, I am a slow learner, so it took some time. There is always a score when you are married. There is always a score, and usually the wife in the marriage is keeping score. Now, this is not a crack on women at all. It's just the way you're wired. And I think that God wired you this way because, as guys, we don't keep score. We don't keep score of what is happening in the marriage. And the score, and again, I should have seen this when we were dating, but the score early on and even today revolves around how I answer, engage, and ask questions. So I can remember this as plain as day. I can remember driving, and sometimes we were going down to Indianapolis on a date, or we were just going to the store, or going from one place to another, and we'd be walking and driving together or talking, in that setting. And Jenny would ask me, "What are you thinking about?" Now, something you have to know about me is I'm okay with silence. You know, sometimes it's just okay for me to have the radio on and I'm listening to something or singing along, and sometimes it's just quiet, and I'm okay with that kind of silence. When Jen is asking that question, what I'm thinking about, I start to panic. There is a little sweat that starts to come over me, because sometimes in those moments when I'm quiet, I'm not thinking about anything. Even worse, sometimes I'm thinking about really stupid stuff, some stuff that doesn't matter. Sometimes I'll be thinking about the football game. Sometimes I'll be thinking about a football game that happened a bunch of years ago. Sometimes I'm thinking about chicken wings. Sometimes I'm not thinking about anything that matters. And if I tell her what I'm thinking about right now, she's going to know, in fact, that I am a moron. I can't tell her so I just say nothing. I'm not really thinking about anything. One of the first lies I ever told leading into my marriage, right? I'm not thinking about anything. Really, it's just kind of empty in there. Nothing going on. I have a good friend of mine. He has a little boy. He's probably 7 or 8 years old. And every now and then, this friend of mine, Jason, would walk into the room, and Grant would be sitting there on the floor. And nothing going on around him. The TV's not on. He's just kind of sitting there, kind of staring off into space. And this friend of mine, Jason, would ask, "Grant, what are you doing?" And this came from an 8-year-old. "I'm in my empty box, Dad." I was like, "That is brilliant." Because I have an empty box, I just didn't know what it was called. Because there are times that I just go to a place where I just kind of let my mind wander and just kind of go. And some of you guys are like, you're right in tune with me because you have an empty box too, don't you? I have. Somebody said I'm there all the time. Okay. Relationships are hard, aren't they? Very difficult. Who does not have a bad relationship story from high school, right? I mean, most of us do. Most of us have a relationship that just went sideways one way or for some reason or another. And something that I started doing when I was doing and involved in student ministry, and I did that for over a decade, and I started at the end of this, it's kind of probably one of those God moments that said, talk to students in this frame. Because what I have learned is that a lot of times high school students are not ready for dating. I mean, they like the engagement of someone of the opposite sex who seems interested in them. But a lot of times those high school relationships end badly. Not always, but a lot of times they just end badly. And this is what I started saying to high school students. When someone is interested in you and they're interested and they're kind of pursuing to date you, consider saying this. "You know what? I don't know that I'm really dating material. I have a tendency to be kind of selfish and kind of self-absorbed. I don't really know what it's like to put someone else first, and I'm probably not going to treat you real well all the time." Now, most of the time, kids would kind of huff off and go, "Oh, that's crazy. That's ridiculous. That's not me. That's somebody else." And all the course of having had those conversations, I've had students, a handful, not a lot, but a handful, come back and say, "You know what? All that stuff that you told me in that little 'I'm not really dating material' speech, that's actually true of me." There needs to be some honesty that we have in our relationships. And what I finally realized about my marriage and whether or not it is healthy is it is not just about the stuff that I do with my wife. It is not just about being together. It's not just about going to different places. It's not just about activity. Sometimes it is simply just being with one another and doing simple things like going and getting coffee and kind of looking right at her and talking to her and not just talking about her, not just being in her presence, but being together. Sometimes it is about doing things that I don't really want to do. My wife has an interesting, we'll call it interesting, list about her favorite household chores. When she first told me this, I was like, why do you even have a list? That is the silliest list I've ever heard of. None of the household chores and here's some of what's on her list. Laundry, dishes, grocery shopping. Now, I look at those three, and I'm like, if I had to choose which of those are my favorite, I'm picking letter D, none of the above. I don't want to do any of that stuff at any point. There is never a time in my life that I have come into the room and go, I cannot wait to get into that dishes that are in the kitchen sink. I just can't wait to bust that down and get that place cleaned up. Now, a clean kitchen is something good to be had, but you have kids, you know that, man, didn't we just load that dishwasher? Now there's another sink full of dishes. Having a list of favorite household chores is kind of like, for me, would be as critical as creating a list of favorite dental procedures. I really like it when they get in there with that drill and they're, I love that sound. To me, that makes about as much sense. But something that I've realized in my marriage is my wife likes to grocery shop. She loves to provide for the family in that way. And so sometimes I need to go grocery shopping with her. Because it's not just about the stuff that we do, it is about the presence of being with one another. Now, here's a red flag warning. If you're in a dating relationship or you are looking for someone, if you are involved in a relationship and that person does not like doing the things that you like doing, and it's always the conversation of, well, I don't really want to do that. Why don't you come over here to my side and we'll do this? If that is where you are, that is a red flag. That every time it comes up to choose, and she has something or he has something, and you have a different thing, and every time you feel like you're acquiescing and running over to their stuff, that is a red flag. Because there should be this thing of sacrificial. We're actually going to unpack this in a couple of weeks that says, I am willing to die to myself in order to be with you. It should not always be the things that I choose that make me happy in order for me to have a happy and healthy relationship with my wife. There should be a regular pattern of sacrificial behavior on my part that I am coming towards my wife. To simply be in one another's presence, to really know each other, to want more than just activity, to want more than just doing stuff together. It is about really knowing one another. And to look at this story in Exodus 33, I wonder if Moses was kind of feeling that way. If there was this sense, you know, God, I have seen you do some amazing things. I've seen some miracles, and I acknowledge that you are leading me somewhere, but I want more. I want something more than just the activity of your presence, God. I want something more. And he asked to see God's glory. Some theologians kind of theorize that when Moses asks to see the glory of God, it makes God happy. I mean, think about the first interaction that God has with Adam and Eve in the garden. He comes down to walk with them, to have relationship, to be near them. And theologians have long said that God is consistently and continually after that with us again. That he wants to be close to us. And so when Moses asks, God, I have seen all that you have done. I have seen all of the power that you behold. But I want more. I don't just want your activity. I want to be close to you. And the struggle is that for a lot of us, we just want the activity of God. We just want God's power and his majesty. We want him to do massive, great, wonderful, beautiful things. But we don't want the intimacy with God. We want God's stuff more than we want him. So this picture, I think, is always kind of interesting. It's almost humorous the way that God works this thing out that happens with Moses. I mean, the Bible doesn't really tell us how it is that God looked, what shape he took, or how it is that God showed himself to Moses, or when he was in the presence of God. But this picture of God putting Moses in the cleft of a rock and covering him with his hand, I mean, that just intimates to me. I mean, I kind of picture this in movie kind of things where God is this gigantic being and he's able to cover up the Moses and the crack that he is in with his hand, which would make Moses like this big, right? So it is an amazing picture that God paints for us that at the moment that Moses asks for something more, God is willing to give him a little bit more, to show him who he is. But if we're honest, looking at this story, Moses asks for the glory of God, and he doesn't entirely get it, does he? He just gets the back of God. God puts him in the rock, covers him with his hand, and passes, and as he passes, pulls his hand off, and Moses gets to see the backside of God. And from that moment forward, Moses has changed. Scripture tells us that when Moses came down from the mountain after this little interaction and Moses does some other things, Moses' face glowed because the glory of God had shone on him. And it kind of freaked the people out. And so whenever Moses was around other people, for days he wore this veil over his face. But every time he would go into the tent of meeting, he would take the veil off so he was in the presence of God. There is something that changes us when we allow ourselves to be exposed to the presence of God. There is something significant that happens, which is why we then read out of John chapter 1 where John talks about the glory of God showing up. And here is the thing that we need to acknowledge, is that while Moses got to see part of the glory of God, the entire glory of God is evident and shows up in the man of Jesus Christ. That there is nothing more. We need to look no further than to see Jesus Christ. He is what God has sent to us. If you and I, and this is a big if you and I want to experience the presence of God, then we need to look no further than to Jesus. But the reason that it's a big if, it's a question mark, is because some of us are very satisfied with the relationship of God that we have right now, where we sit this morning in this place. That we are satisfied, we are comfortable with this peace of God. And I am not so sure. I mean, Moses going to see God and his face glows, and I don't know if I'm ready for all of that. We kind of throw up all kinds of barriers and obstacles into the presence of God, and all God is simply asking us and inviting us is to recognize that we get changed, and it actually is for the better when the presence of God is active and shows up in our lives. Go to Hebrews chapter 1. This is Paul does a beautiful job of explaining and showing us what God has done through Jesus. Hebrews chapter 1 talks about how all we ever need is Jesus. Hebrews chapter 1, verse 1, "In the past, God spoke to our forefathers through the prophets at many times and in various ways. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, and through whom he made the universe." This is just another reminder that Jesus has always been around. This was not a God panicking and making a decision and sending Jesus. Jesus has always been present. Jesus was there at the beginning of the creation of the universe. Verse 3. "The Son, Jesus, is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being." That is such a powerful, it should take root in us to recognize that anytime we want to see the glory of God, anytime we want to experience the power of God, we need to look no further than Jesus, because Paul explains it here. He says Jesus is the radiance. He is the exact representation of God's glory. The exact nature of God is found in Jesus. Have you ever kind of found yourself at a place, maybe you got a job or there was a project that was handed to you or something that was you needed to accomplish that you felt way in over your head? You're like, I don't even know if I'm equipped for this. I don't know if I can handle this. I feel like maybe they got the wrong guy. Anybody feel that way before? I certainly have. About 3.5 years ago, when I first came to you guys and began working with you and the church in North Bradley, there was a big part of me that began to question, I don't think that I can do this. I don't think that I am equipped. All I've ever done is student ministry, and God said, do something different, and I kind of said, okay, but I'm not sure if this can't be what he meant. Can't be. I don't know if I'm equipped for this. I don't know if I can handle this. You throw in the idea, just in and of itself, leading a church, But let's pull two churches that are financially struggling, who are not even in the same town. They're separated by about 30 miles. And both of them are kind of struggling with a sense of identity and what is next and a sense of mission. And let's put all of that under one leadership, a guy who's never led a church on his own to do anything. I mean, that sounds like a terrible idea, doesn't it? That's just awful. Why in the world would that work at all? Now, and I'm not telling you this to point to how great I am, because I'm not that great. Something that I realized as we kind of went further into this relationship is that this was a job that nobody else wanted. That's part of the issue. And it really isn't about you guys as individuals. It's just about where the church, this church and the church in North Bradley are at. This is a difficult thing to engage in, and what we're doing of turning and reshaping the organization of this church and the mission. It is a huge job. And again, I'm not telling you this because look at me and how great I am. I don't feel like I'm great. I feel like God has asked us to do some things, and along the way, we have been faithful to respond to those things. I mean, looking from the outside in, maybe we all should have just brought our shovels and started shoveling dirt and tried, you know, just gracefully buried the church. And we all just kind of scatter and we go to another church in town or wherever else and kind of move on with our lives. That would have been an easy thing to do compared to what we're trying to do. Because God has consistently been on us as a church and through your leadership to say there are some things that can change to where God can recover and rebuild this group of people. And God is doing some significant things. But it revolves around our desire that simply said, we want more than just God's activity. We want more than just God to grow this church. We want more than just for us to recover and become financially healthy. We want more than just the stuff of God. We want the presence of God in this place. Every time that we gather, this place becomes a draw to people who are broken and need and acknowledge the need for a relationship with God. That was some of what we talk about every time that we gather on Sunday mornings. It's something that we continue to put before the elders, saying we want more than just the activity of God. We want God's presence in this place. Do we really realize what we have in Jesus? Because this is a picture that we've used for a long time now, we all bring baggage into this place. I mean, honestly, we carry baggage around with us everywhere we go. And some of it is bad past relationships, some of it is difficulty with health, bad family situations. We all have baggage that we carry around with us. Bad decisions that we've made, poor moves, all of those kind of things. The hope is that when you and I come into this place and we bring our baggage into this house, that there would be a sense that we can put those bags down, that we can be willing to let go of those things. And when the service is done, because there is this wild temptation that grows in us that says, pick the bags back up and take them back out with you. But our hope is, and my desire is, that this would be a place where you can come in, you can lay those bags down, and you can surrender that stuff to God because His presence is here, and He desires to carry those things for you, for me. But every time we get to the close of the service and everyone knows, oh, we're singing the last song, and we kind of gather up our stuff and we get ready to go out, symbolically some of us are picking up the baggage of difficulties and problems and sickness and job issues, and we pick all that stuff back up and we carry it right back out the doors, just like we came in. And the hope is that the presence of God would be so overwhelming in this place that you and I would feel comfortable enough to put the bags down and let God do something significant with now our empty hands. And I wonder if part of the reason that we pick the bags back up is because we're not sure what we have in Christ. I think at times we look for secret magic formulas to make it all right and to fix our lives. And for some of us, we carry scars of past hurts and difficulties. Saying things like, well, one time 23 years ago, I got burned, and so I don't go, I'm never going to let that happen to me again. So I don't go anywhere, and I don't do anything, and I'm just going to kind of find God on my own. Ever known anybody like that? Got beat up or burned by a church situation or someone that called themselves a Christian. So I'm letting go of all of that, and I'm not coming back ever again. And I will try and find God some other way, some other place. You remember the story in John chapter 4. It's one of my favorite stories of the Gospels, where Jesus kind of, he has that engagement with the desperate housewife by the well, and she is in bad shape, and she's out there because she doesn't have any friends, and she doesn't have any connection to anybody. And Jesus has this conversation with her, and over the course of the conversation, we see her life begin to turn a corner and make a change and a shift in who she was and what she was doing. We look at those kind of stories and we say, man, that is beautiful. That is such an amazing picture of what God can do, rescuing someone who felt like she didn't have anybody, she didn't have any family, she didn't have anybody that she trusted, and yet God rescued her. So we look at that and we say, beautiful picture. I wish that I could do something like that. Something we have to remember is that a lot of times those stories revolve around people like prostitutes, like a woman of ill repute in John 4, like lepers, people that the local church in the first century wanted to have nothing to do with. And we look at those stories and say, man, wouldn't that be great to have that kind of witness and that kind of story with someone? The trouble is, as a church, we don't do very much to engage those kind of scandalous people. We just don't. Because we're concerned about what it makes us look like as a church, or how it makes me look as an individual, or maybe it's just too hard, and those stories are messy, and it is a mess from front to back. And if I get involved in that, then I'm going to be in it up to my neck, and I'm not really cut out for that kind of thing. So I am going to remain comfortable in my relationship with God, and I'm going to go to church, and I'm going to do my due diligence there, and that is going to be the sum total of my relationship with God. It's very easy to fall into that pattern and that kind of behavior. And we end up not having stories like the woman at the well. We end up not having stories that about how we have reached out to someone and we have helped bring someone closer to Christ. Because in this story, there is this distinct possibility, as Jesus starts talking to her, that she's not going to hear the story. She's not going to engage with Jesus. She's just going to sidestep the whole thing and not take Jesus' invitation for the forgiveness of sin. She maybe would walk away having never changed her life, never allowing God to speak to her. I mean, this story is in the Bible in part because of the way that it not only changed her, but changed the whole town. How many stories are not in our Bible of conversations that Jesus had with someone who simply said, you know what, I'm not doing that. Too big a price to pay. You're requiring too much of me, and so I'm not going there. I'm not going to do that. And the truth is that if we decide to engage with people who do not know Christ, there may be a lot of stories like that where someone has said, "You know what? I don't want to hear about Jesus anymore. I don't want to listen to that. I'm not interested in who that is. I'm not interested in your religion, and I don't care anything about your church." And it's really easy for us to kind of go inward and say, "Well, I failed. I didn't do what God had wanted me to do, and so I just made a mess of it." What we are really after in the midst of all of our brokenness, this is true of the woman at the well, this is true of all of the stories in the Bible, and it's true of our lives now. We are after wholeness. Because deep down inside, we recognize, we acknowledge that we are broken, that we have not done it very well, that we have not lived up to what we had hoped. And so in our search for wholeness, we have decided to go and search somewhere else, to try and find the answer to those questions some other place. Because in this story with Jesus with the woman at the well, he talks to her about her husband, and it gets very personal real quick. "I'm not married. I've been married 5 times. The man that you're with is not your husband." And it gets personal in a hurry. And she decides to do what a lot of us would do. She changes the subject. "Let's talk about worship instead. Let's talk about something we can really get down to it and kind of fight about, because your people say we're supposed to worship over here, and your people say we're supposed to worship over here." And Jesus simply draws her back to a place of acknowledging that there is a deep love that God has for us And she starts talking about this Messiah who's supposed to come and rescue us. And then Jesus says this very well. I love the way that Eugene Peterson puts it. Go to the next slide there. It's from the Message Bible. He says, the one you're talking about, that's me. And you don't have to look any longer. I think some of us feel like we are trapped in lifestyle choices or relationships that we acknowledge this is not good for us, or decision-making patterns, or just this thought process that kind of overrides everything. We feel at times we are trapped in there because we do not realize what we have in Jesus. She is looking for the Savior, the Messiah. And Jesus says, you don't have to look any further. You don't have to look anywhere else because I am the one that you are looking for. Something that I kind of started to figure out as being the pastor of two churches is that it is not about my abilities. It's not about my strengths. It's not about my weaknesses, thank God. It's not about my creativity. It's not about my know-how. If I acknowledge in what God has called me to do that it is totally reliant upon Him, then I am free to now do what God has called me to do. That I don't have to fix every broken thing. That I don't have to correct everything that seems out of whack. And an admittance that God loves this church, He loves this city, He loves this county long before I ever came along, and He loves it more than I ever could. When I realize that, I am now freed up to do the thing that God has called me to do. And this really isn't about me at all. It is about all of us. God has placed in your life relationships that He is desiring to use you to draw people to Him. There is no accident. There is no happenstance. I don't believe that God is a God of chance. The places that you go, that you shop, the people that you spend time with, the lives that you interact with, this is all on purpose. Because God has said, I am placing you in these places for significance, that you will draw other people to me. And it's so easy to believe and begin to think that Jesus may in fact not be enough. That if we just had the right kind of meetings, if we just had the right technology, if we had better this or better that, then everything would be just fine. But when our lives are connected to Him, we ultimately lack nothing. Not because of how great we are, but because of who we are connected to. If you remember the scripture that we referenced last week, Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10, that God has birthed something inside of you and I. He has placed something inside of you and I. If we have trusted with our lives with Christ, those things that God has put inside of us are to come out. We are to engage in the work that God has prepared for us to do. But again, it's so easy to hold God at distance and not acknowledge that Jesus is everything that we need. We're going to come to the table. And maybe we need to acknowledge that as we come to this place, maybe we need to admit that we have not taken our relationship with Christ as seriously as we need to, that we have held Him at a distance. There are times over the course of what I do in ministry and working with this church in North Bradley that I get to travel to conferences and conventions, and only a handful of times has my wife been able to go with me. So while I am gone, I want to talk to her at least once a day while I am gone. More than that if possible, but at least once a day, just to reconnect and find out how things are going, and so that I can engage with her at least a little bit. Are there times in my relationship with my wife that is the better communication is happening there than it is in my relationship with God? Yeah. But the truth of it is that my wife can't rescue me from hell, cannot forgive my sins. I mean, that's not what God gave her to me for. And yet, I sometimes think it is more important to talk with my wife more than it is that I talk with my God, my Savior. That there are times in my life that it has been not as important to engage with God on that intimate, close level. So maybe that's where you sit this morning, that you have kind of slid into this comfortable thing with God. This I go to church and I do my due diligence there and I pay my tithe and whatever else that makes up your relationship with this church. But God has not been at the central fulcrum of the rest of your life. And so maybe it's time to consider that relationship needs to go up a notch. And I don't think it's this black and white thing that there was this day that I didn't take it serious and then I did take it serious and I just kind of flipped the switch. I think it's a scale that we end up finding ourselves on. There are moments that I am deeply connected and in tune with God. And then there are other times when I see God in the background and He is there and His voice is kind of faint, but He's not at the center point of decisions and activity of my life. So maybe as you come to the table, there is simply an admittance that we need to reinvest in our relationship with God. To ask for it to go deeper, to step out of this casual approach of comfortable and ordinary. God desires so much more from us. And maybe you sit here this morning and you're going to come to the table out of a sense of obligation. Well, Nathan said that we're going to do this every Sunday from here until Easter, and so I'm a part of this church and I'm going to go to the table and I'm just going to do my part. Maybe that's where you sit this morning. And there needs to be this admittance on your behalf that when you come to this table, it needs to take on some more deeper meaning than maybe you've given it recently. Do you come to the table to connect with God, to commune with Him, to ask for something that you had never asked for before? Remember, theologians think that when Moses asks to see the glory of God, it actually makes God happy because Moses is desiring something more than he had when that conversation began. Maybe that's where you sit. It is time to ask more of God than you've ever asked before. And you come to this place and say, God, I am willing to follow You, but I want more of You. I want more of You. Father, as we come to this table, as we kind of spend time at this, something that is so sacred and meaningful, the act of sharing in communion, may our desire for Your presence be stronger than ever. Moses says some important words. He says, God, if You are not going ahead of us, then we do not want to go at all. Maybe that's what we need to say. Maybe we need to acknowledge that I've been trying to drive this thing on my own. And now I'm realizing that I've been running out ahead of God. Father, it is deeply complicated, the life that some of us live and the way that we think about You. And even the baggage that we carry about You, about church. The baggage we carry related to family. So for some of us, this is a difficult minefield to start walking through. May we never forget, God, that You are leading us into something great, something wonderful, something beautiful. You are leading us into the deeper recesses of Your presence. So, Father, as we come to this table, as we spend time in Your presence, hear our cries for Your activity in our life.